සුඛී හන්තු සාදු සාදු අනුමෝදාමි අනුමෝදි තබ්බං කම කමි තබ්බං සුවපත් සුවපත් කම So again we are going to have about 1 hour for a discussion in English medium. So as many of you know, we have already assigned a topic or sutta. Before going to the sutta, if anyone is having any specific question or statement, suggestion, we can take few minutes. Then
Avasarai Bante, we have not received any reports for today.
Ari, please repeat.
Bante, so far we have not received any reports.
Okay. So that means, that indicates we are going to go to the Dvaitanupassana Sutta in Sutta Nipata. And today, hopefully we have to have Namarupa. And I would like to invite Venerable Buddha Rakkhita to present today's topic and his view, please.
So I'm continuing reading on page 288 of Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation of the Sutta Nipada, and I'm beginning in the section Form and Formless States. If bhikkhus, there are those who ask, could there be correct contemplation of the dyads in some other way? You should answer them thus: there could be, and how could there be? Formless states are more peaceful than states of form. This is one contemplation. Cessation is more peaceful than formless states. This is a second contemplation. When a bhikkhu dwells thus, correctly contemplating a dyad, heedful, ardent, and resolute, one of two fruits is to be expected of him: either final knowledge in this very life, or if there is a residue remaining, the state of non-returning. This is what the Blessed One said. Having said this, the Fortunate One, the teacher, further said this: those beings who fare on to the form and those who dwell in the formless, not understanding cessation, come back to renewed existence. But those who have fully understood forms without settling down in a formless state, who are liberated in cessation, those people have abandoned death. So we all have our own immediate and direct experience of the state of form. So this is the human state is a state of form. In other words, we have a body, we have a gross manifestation of the body. And animals also are in the state of form. However, here the Buddha refers to what he calls a formless state. So through the practice of meditation, we can cultivate our mind and take different objects of meditation as objects of mind, and this purifies the stream of consciousness, and even into the jhanic states. The first four jhanas are considered to be contemplations on form itself, and then the higher states, the higher four jhanas, are contemplations on formless states. So we put aside the form as an object in the meditation, and take more and more perceptions that are just purely based in the mind. So with this purification of the mind and with this direction of the mind towards different states, we can direct it towards states of form or states that are formless. And with rebirth, then we can take rebirth into these various states according to our kamma, according to our conditioning of mind. We can take rebirth into these formless states. Now, these obviously sound a bit exotic if you don't practice, if you're not familiar with these states through direct knowledge, through your own direct knowledge of meditation. And most of these states are accessible through practices of samatha practice. And these are associated with the kusala kamma of meditation itself. So if you spend time in India, you may come across some sadhus there, some of these renunciates who live within India. And there are renunciates and schools of meditation within India that are very focused on cultivation of these states, these formless states, and then also of, you might say, psychic powers and so forth that are associated with these states of concentration. And some people have a natural propensity or interest or inclination towards these samatha states. Our respective teacher, Syada Upandita, was one of the only monks that I knew that really gave an explicit teaching around how the vipassana states of meditation were equivalent to these samadhi states. But I don't really remember if he mentioned how, if these vipassana states of concentration were purifying the mind so that we could take a rebirth into the formless states or these higher states of rupa jhana he used to merely talk about how they were equivalent in many ways. But it's necessary for the Buddha to talk about these states of concentration because any really serious meditator may have the parami, may have the conditioning, may have the inclination, the aptitude to cultivate very deep states of samadhi. And if you look at the suttas, the Buddha very frequently is discussing states of samadhi, states of calm, peace, concentration. And he discusses them in terms of particularly the first four jhanas, which are rupa. They take rupa itself, materiality, or elements of materiality, or elements of the material experience as the object of meditation itself. So it's as a consequence of his emphasis on meditation and his teaching widely around the different aspects of meditation that he discusses like these states of arupa jhana and rupa jhana. And I have to say that I'm not familiar myself with the arupa jhana, and I don't really have a strong interest in it myself, because as the Buddha mentions here, that one has to realize that calm and peaceful states, whether they are of form or whether they are formless, are not an escape from suffering itself. They are peaceful. And we can find more and more peaceful states of mind, especially in these formless states. However, beings will just continue to fare on, to take rebirth from one form to another. Those who dwell in the formless states do not understand cessation, and therefore they come back to a renewed existence. But those who have fully understood forms, whether it's form, the state of form or the state of formlessness, they don't settle in these states of the formless states because they seek the liberation in cessation itself, and they abandon death itself. They don't wish to be reborn again. So maybe I flatter myself, but I have that inclination myself to abandon death itself, to abandon the existential suffering as the target of my practice, rather than attainment of states of deep samadhi, deep calm, or the cultivation of psychic powers and so forth. So once you start to get into these form and formless states, there's myriads of these. So for instance, in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, after the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, there is a long list of the different kinds of beings who praised the Buddha. And you can have some idea about the complexity of all of these different realms of existence. And however, nevertheless, the way I look at it myself is that, you know, even though some of these different states of being are very esteemed and they're very pleasant, they're very beautiful, they're very expansive, radiant, effulgent. They use all these nice words. However, they're still linked into this round of rebirth. And, you know, so it's still to be noted that the human existence, the human realm, the human form is the one where the arahants and the Buddhas themselves, whether they are Pachaka Buddhas or whether they are Sammasambuddha, then they are born into this human realm. So this human existence has a particular value in some ways. It has both the carrot and the stick. And it's always surprising. Well, it's just an expression I've always had in my mind since I was a child. I grew up on a farm and I was told, you know, make hay while the sun is shining. And, you know, when people are in good circumstance, when they are in good situations, that's the time to do a lot of spiritual work. So if you have the fortune to be born healthy, with a reasonable mind, you know, and you have peace, you have adequate amounts of food, then you have the opportunity to strive and make great progress in this very life itself. Great progress in terms of the sasana, in terms of diminishing one's suffering, and find an escape from suffering itself. So I personally have had was born in a place very far from the Buddhist teachings. You know, there was no Buddhism in Ireland when I grew up as a child, or even now to this very day, there's little to no Buddhism. And there was no internet and there was no discussion on the radio or on the television about Buddhism. And really, there wasn't any books about it either. However, I had an internal interest in meditation, and there were certain types of meditation available at that time, particularly around yoga and around Zen meditation, which is, you could say, a type of Buddhist meditation. But I wasn't taught by monks. I was taught by lay people, and they had only interest in the secular aspects of meditation itself. They had only this interest in developing calm and peace. They were interested, you could say, in the formless states to some degree. Not that any of them cultivated formless states, but I'm just saying they had an emphasis on calm and peace and not an emphasis on escape from the rounds of rebirth. There was no discussion of suffering and the escape from suffering. There was no discussion of the Four Noble Truths. And so recently, when I was back in Ireland in 2016, I actually went and did some retreats with the Zen groups in Ireland. And the teacher acknowledged that that they really don't teach anything about the Four Noble Truths. So even though they call themselves Buddhist, they don't actually teach zero on the Four Noble Truths. So if you know the suttas, this is one of the key teachings that the Buddha emphasizes as distinguishing Buddhism from non-Buddhism. Now, I have a debt of gratitude to the Zen groups because they were very helpful in my own cultivation of practice. So I taught with that in mind, that I was fulfilling my own debt, my own karmic debt to the practitioners. However, my point is that it's very hard to escape suffering and So even if you can cultivate these states of formless mind states or very lofty versions of states of form, then you still are stuck in the rounds of rebirth. And again, as it's mentioned at the end of the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, you know, even though only one of the Buddha's disciples attained the Sotapanna at the end of hearing that talk, that is Venerable Kondanya, there were a myriad of beings in higher realms who were liberated by hearing the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. And again, we should understand the same in many of the other suttas when it is mentioned that arahants were all liberated. Well, other beings in other realms were also liberated when they were listening in on the Buddha's teachings. So what was missing from their knowledge was the way of escape from suffering itself. So these states of mind, if you have the ability to cultivate them, it's a very useful thing. And you can be reborn into good states of existence. And again, if you have that wisdom factor and you hear the teachings, then you can make very swift progress in escaping from the path. However, I also realize it's a bit of a rabbit hole. You can really, you know, they talk about the internet being a kind of a rabbit hole. You can kind of disappear down the internet. And you can also disappear down into the states of mind, of the states of concentration. And without that focus on liberation, without that focus on escape from suffering, without reflecting every now and again that I have a good opportunity and that I should make hay while the sun is shining, then one can be lost in these states, and it in the end is kind of empty food. You go from one pleasant existence to another pleasant existence, but there's always the threat that your good karma will expire, and then you're not in such good situations. So one is completely subject to the law of karma and karma vipaka, and one is just reborn according to one's good deeds. And if you wish to have good rebirths, just practice dana, sila, and bhavana. You know, really just be diligent at that, and then you can also have good births and rebirths. However, the problem is that it's not in every birth or even in every aeon of births that one encounters the teachings of a Sama Sambuddha, or that one cultivates the inclination to liberate oneself from the rounds of rebirth. So it takes a particular kind of wisdom or insight to not be distracted by the hedonic pleasures of the world, the sex, drugs, rock and roll, and then also these other, you know, very lofty states of mind, such as found in the form and formless states. So we should keep death close to ourselves, and we should, you know, sometimes as monks we reflect upon the asubha, or we reflect upon the brevity of life, how short it is, or we participate in funerals, and we keep death close to ourselves, so that whenever we have that good opportunity of making hay while the sun is shining, then that we make the most of that opportunity and we make progress towards the goal of freedom from suffering. Not freedom of suffering, meaning freedom of suffering is like where we can just dial in how much suffering we would like. So a person who is rich, or a person who has a lot of, we'll just say, samadhi, they can dial in how much suffering they wish to have. They can have very pleasant states of mind. They can have any material object they want. So they have freedom of suffering. Whatever they want of suffering, they can have it, a little or a lot. But a person who has freedom from suffering means that they have escaped from suffering. They're not bothered by suffering because they have overcome suffering, and this is the greatest victory to have. So I would happily like to hear what the Venerable Mahathera has to say.
So I told today discussion will be about Nama Rupa. It's a mispresentation, but sorry, it was on the Rupa Arupa, Rupa Loka Arupa Loka. So being a Vipassana fellows, we have a lot of views. We have preconceived ideas about the Rupa Loka Arupa Loka. As being in Burma, it happened me to see how the Vipassana masters, top class masters, talk about Rupa Loka Arupa Loka. And I try my best to see how the science is talking about the Rupa Loka Arupa Loka, how the Samatha yogis talk about the Rupa Loka Arupa Loka. They have their phobias. They have their favorites. And it's very interesting because it is spiritual. It is something religious. Because when the René Descartes defined ergo cogito sum, then he says, I think, therefore I am. So therefore, they separated material world for the scientist and the immaterial part called mystics, and it is for the church. And they took care about the church and the God and everything, and science hated it. Science says, no God, no such thing. They are mystics, not scientific. So scientific experimenting took two criteria. One thing is repeatability. If it is something repeatable, that you can accept. And anyone who is doing have the same results. So these are the only domains science developed. So therefore, immaterial world, this is not measurable, not come under the gadgets and kind of thing, they refused. So, but once what happened was, when the science keep on doing, from the Newtonian physics to Einstein physics, they discovered the gravity. It is not a matter, but measurable. So ultimately, it was a leap, big leap, 200 years or more. And then when they come to the strong and weak electronic and the energy, still the gravity is valid. But majority of the picture is not exposed by gravity. Instead, they are talking about the atomic energy, immaterial, and nanophysics. And now science says the mind science. They coin terms, mind science. That is because more than the materialistic world, mind is more subtle. And if you study, it can go deeper and your range is bigger. So what is the role of the Buddha? Or what is the role of the Buddhist teaching on the materialistic and immaterial thing? So it is appeared in the Rupa Loka Arupa Loka. And Rupa Jhana Arupa Jhana is more religious, more spiritual. But Rupa Loka, we have to compare it with Kama Loka. That is what the lay people. Lay people always in the Kama Loka. Kama Loka means visuals that you can see and multiplication. Multidimensional, 3D, colored and shapes and sounds. And they are talking about Dolby system, mono system, many, 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 many methods. And the smell, taste, tongue, and the body. And they are the what we call do it in the technology and in the science. And together with the Newtonian understanding, it went humankind for 200 years, forward or backward, I don't know. Anyway, when you are talking about the Kama Guna, all the scientific education is to promote Kama Guna. Promote sensuous pleasure. And the Sigmund Freud told, it's a sexual pleasure, not the sensual. The Buddha used the decent word, sensual pleasure, senses. But the Buddha gave an radical example, being a prince, being the appointed person to be king, renounced. And then he explained the renounced pleasure is better than the kama guna because he is affordable. He's in kama guna because even the, before the Buddha, there were some recluse, some ajivakas, the samanas, and they give a radical reflection on the kama guna, they renounce. And then what they practice was called rupa dhyana. They call kama is replaced by rupa. The Buddha gave very lucid explanation. Kama, you have to replace first with the kama sanya and replace the kama sanya from the rupa. And then, now today's discussion is rupa into rupa sanya. So, four stages, that is, you can see in Anijasappaya Sutta, Chulla Sunyata Sutta, Buddha says how it is happening. And very well explained in Pottapada Sutta also. And they are, they, in Burmese system, they give Rupa Loka, Arupa Loka is an attraction. If you get attracted into Arupa Loka, you get lost because you lose the Dhamma. So they give three classic examples. Asita the hermit came to the, soon the Siddhartha the prince born. And Prince Suddhodana presented Asita, presented the prince to the Asita, telling to worship. What happened was, his not the hand, but his legs kept upon the turban of the Asita. And then he started crying and he started smiling. Then the king was upset, telling that he is having so much of mystic powers. Why is he crying? Why is he smiling? At the beginning, he was such a meritorious person. He's having so much of skills. He may be the Buddha or world-turning monarch. Oh, Prince King was so happy because in his lineage, it's the biggest. Then why you are crying? At that time, I can't be here because before that, I am dying off. Then I am going to the Arupa Loka. When you go to the Arupa Loka, you can't see Buddha. You can hear Dhamma. And so Pandita Sayadaw says, he can't end his Arupa Loka, but he earned is so attracted. So therefore, this Dvaitanupassana Sutta, it says, in words, it says, Arupehi Nirode Santitaro Ayan Dutiyanupassana. He says, you have to nirodha, you have to see the end of arupa also, that is more subtle, more pleased, more happy. But he was so attracted into this arupa jhana, and occasionally only he come to the human world, he live in the heavenly sphere, and he can't get rid of it because he gotten rid of kama, gotten rid of rupa, now he's so bogged down, attracted. So Pandita Sayadaw says, he himself knows Buddha is going to happen 45 years time, 35 years time. He is dying, but he can't look at because his senses gone, because he is in Arupa Loka. The second one is Alara Kalam, Udrakarama Putra. Prince Siddhartha at the age of 29 renounced and he went to these two teachers. They are teaching the Arupa Jhana, 7th and 8th. Nivasanyana sanyayatane, akinchanyayatane. And he was so skillful. Within 2 weeks, he mastered. And master told, please stay with us. I will give you an assistant lecture post. Half of the students, please run the show. He says, no. I have to go in Satcha Gavesi, King Kusala Gavesi. He felt the yecha rupu upaka satta, yecha arupa vasino, nirodhang appa jananto, agantaro punabhava. It says, those who are attracted to the material world, the gross world, or eating, drinking, and kind of a concrete world, arupa vasi, the others, those who are living in the arupa jana, they can't see nibbana. They can't see the cessation of that very thing because it is a very great achievement. They can't see the end of it. They will return they will come to the bhava. So exactly the same thing happened. The Prince Siddhartha became omnipotent, the omniscient, and he look at with whom I can share Dhamma. He remembered Alara Kala Mudra Karamputra. They are the most suitable, but they are dead, they are gone. 7 days before, one person. Last night, one person. Then he told, can I go there and rescue them? No. They have gone to the Arupa Jhana. They have no ears. They can't see Buddha. Lost. So therefore, Vipassana people have a phobia to the Arupa Jhana. They think that if you go to the Arupa Jhana, it is a trap. No. Arupa Jhana also have the end of it. I will take the example of Upanita Sayadaw's Rupa Jhana, Vipassana Jhana. In this life itself, book has a separate chapter on Rupa Jhana. And he says, pragmatically it is almost like Samatha Jhana, but it is not Samatha Jhana. You are not get absorbed into that, but you can get the practical experience of it. Therefore, easy for you to see the changing nature of the Rupa Jhana. But if you go inside and absorbed, it's difficult to see the disadvantages. So therefore, go to Rupa Jhana and see the end of it. But they are not called Samatha Jhana, they are called Vipassana Jhana. Vipassana Jhana, now it is 30, 40 years, no one challenged. In my talks, I always try to give Arupa Jhana also so common. It is not difficult, but not the jhanic absorption, but you can see your object is disappearing. You can see a part and partial of your body is disappearing. Sometimes you are completely lost your body, and you don't know whether you are in a sleep or not. So under such circumstances, there are 50-50. Some people consider it as a loneliness. Other people consider it as aloneness. So if those who have the aloneness approach, I call Vipassana people. Those who feel lonely and fearful, no limits, and they feel lost, they consider the development of meditation as a mistake. This is exactly the point where interviews are necessary. The disciple has to report, and then the teacher has to say, so much you have gotten rid of karma, so much you are in the rupa. Now, when the rupa is going there, you have a fear or attraction to the arupa. So, fear also bad, attraction also bad. You have to see the cessation of that particular fear, that particular attraction. So, therefore, arupa jhana also can be explained in the same grain, just like Upanita Sayadaw. And I can't believe very young girls, young boys, they are talking about, after a few minutes' time, I go to some sort of state, I am not sure whether breath is there or not. I am not sure whether the body is there or not. But I am not dead. I am not unconscious. I am not sleepy. They experience it. So I ask them to please go again and again. That is the science. You have to repeat it. First time you notice is called Asevana Pratya. You know it is possible. Next time go prepared, that is what I am going to see. When the objects, when the body, when the mindfulness, everything ceases, can you awaken to that darkness, that sleepy nature, that kind of thing? It's a kind of a trick. Can you awaken to the sleep? Can you awaken to the dream? That is what the Carlos Castaneda is trying to say about the West Indies, Red Indians. Their group leader is being selected with a challenge. He must prove he can get awakened into a sleep. He can get awakened into the dream. And once he proved to the clan, then only he become the leadership. There are some cults, but they are doing by marijuana and all the kind of other hallucination and drugs. But this is no using anything. So you go to the unknown and known. You are hearing a sound all of a sudden. You feel a pain all of a sudden. You feel like breath all of a sudden. That means you know, that's a one point I am still searching. Buddha says, you know unknown once you come back to the known. That's a fact. Once you awaken, you know, just before that, I was in a state, I was not aware. And some people consider it as an accident. Some people say it's a good point because just before that, I was not there. Krishnamurti says, early morning when you get up, don't rush, just see, before getting up, what was the state of mind? Self is not there. I was not there. Soon you get up and you notice by the eye, ear, nose, tongue, and you get the orientation, then ego reinstalled. So therefore it is not a spiritual advice. But if you know that in a meditation the breath becomes subtle, that is the, for my interpretation is, the rupa becomes slowly arupa. Rupa gives rise to the arupa. So you have to monitor it in a such a very thin slicing of time. And there is some margin. Then onward you don't know. You have no control. Your self is not there. Senses are not there. But again you awaken into, again the sensuous world. That awakening is like a threat. Some people get a shock. Some people understand by awakening only you know, just before that I was in an unknown area. So that part I have never seen that kind of interpretation, so I am presenting it as a suggestion. Upandita Sayadaw says, if something goes wrong, we'll say you are wandering, mind daydreaming, fantasizing, whatever may be. Before going into the wandering, daydreaming, if you are mindful, and after the wandering, if you are mindful, in between, no defilements. That's a formula he gives. It's the Vijaganita, that means algebra. Before you do a mistake or mishap, if you know you are thoroughly full established mindfulness, steadfast, and then you lost something, and again you come back, how quickly you come back is called the resilience. And if you know, yes, in between, there was something unknown. So that part, he says, no defilement, not to fear, not to develop sarcastic or underestimation. Practice again and one day you will understand, I know, I don't know. So that is what I feel, how to work with the arupa. Arupehi nirodha santitaro. Arupa nirodho, when you go to the unknown, the end of unknown is more peaceful, more subtle, because you know this is the knowledge. Now I am in again senses. That indicates earlier there were no senses. There were no experience. You may say dementia and all the kind of thing. If you go unprepared, your short memory gone. But whenever you come up, you know that can happen again and again. It's a refinement that is more happy, not due to the samatha, but due to the panya. You have a deep understanding, losing the contact and again come back to the contact. Losing the contact, you do practice, meditation. Coming back, an accident, but you go prepared. So that is possible in this very life, before the Nibbana, before the death. That part is missing in the Theravada. That part partially discussing in Mahayana in terms of Papancha. Theravada, they are appreciating Arupa Jhana, but they are not talking about the end of the Arupa Jhana. So in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, even go to the highest Arupa Jhana, that was Neva Sanya, Na Sanya, Venerable Ananda asked the Buddha, Bhante, now he is destined, isn't it? He is next to Nibbana. No, Ananda, no. Bhante, after refining so much, given the karma by rupa, given the rupa by arupa, still in the highest arupa, he is not destined, no. He can have attraction to the arupa. It's almost like attraction to the karma. So you have to see the death of arupa, cessation of arupa, or disappearance of arupa. That means, in a dramatic way, it says, Rajava Rattang Vijitampahaya, to give a fight and kill everyone and win the country, and then give up. you are winning with your whole warfare and kind of thing, merciless. And after winning, give up. That cannot be explained in economical terms, political terms, or social terms. Vehemently you are fighting. After the complete cessation, you say, let the defilement come, I am ready. So that his preparedness is called arupehi nirodha. Arupehi nirodha santitaro. So that part is called relative. Your arupa is relative to rupa, rupa is relative to arupa. End of arupa is again you accepting the rupaloka. There you understand everything is nothing but, everything is nothing but a perception. Neva sanya, na sanya. So parallelism in science is matter, antimatter and the dark matter. This is matter is less than 4%. 26% antimatter, 70% dark matter. So how to measure? Matter you can, because three-dimensional. But now they are talking about the antimatter and dark matter. So how can we teach this to the grade 8, grade 9, grade 10 children? Because they have to teach matter. So likewise, the Buddhism also is teaching the Kaya Anupassana and then slowly, slowly taken into the Arupa level and then Arupa level and just to see, after winning it, throw it away. Oh, see the destruction of it, see the cessation of it. And I would say heroic, it's a brevity. It is, I would say, superhuman. So that's all, Venerable, I would like to add. Maybe contradictory, but I am maintaining it.
So it's also a very deep point that this is being made here about the cessation is more powerful. It's more cessation is more peaceful, yes, than cessation is more peaceful than the formless states.
It is not samatha. It's a knowledge. You know you lost something. Yeah. You know that is losing is the sign of anicca.
And, you know, it goes back to that, you know, that point that was being made again where somebody was perplexed about how can Nibbana be the highest pleasure. It's the highest pleasure because it's the complete elimination of suffering. That samsara, bound up in samsara, you're bound up with suffering. No matter how successful you are within the realm of samsara, there will be suffering. And I also find that compassion or karuna is a very useful perception to have. I mean, metta is very popular. But again, compassion is also very useful because it links one to, you know, no matter how successful they are, as long as they're within the realm of samsara, there will be suffering. And this is a very deep point that even no matter how deep you go into peaceful, calm states of mind, there still will be suffering. And that it's only with this complete cessation of suffering that we experience such the highest of happiness, the highest of the highest liberation, you know, so that cessation is more peaceful. So in whichever way you look at these things, Nibbana is more peaceful, Nibbana is more as such happy than existence or these rounds of samsara. And it's a very difficult point. You know, there was one Tibetan Lama and he used this term spiritual materialism. And, you know, we can be materialists, meaning chasing after material wealth. So chasing after the form states, you can say, what we can get out of the different rupa loka. And then there are the spiritual materialists who want to chase after, you could say, the formless states, that they have, you know, some lofty attainment in attaining such and such a peaceful state of calm state of mind. But the, you know, my own feeling is like, so what? So what? So what you're so wealthy? So what? You know, so what that you have such calm states of mind? You know, I have spent a lot of time with samatha practitioners, and I don't wish to discredit them, but they certainly love these calm states of mind and peace, and nobody disturbed them, and ideal conditions, and everything is perfect, and it's so what, you know? But did you get out of suffering? Did you get free? Do you have wisdom and insight? Because no matter what suffering I encounter, you know, whether it's, you know, health or mental suffering of all kinds, then with the path, with the Dhamma, I feel quite happy. That's my safety, because there's a way out of the burning house, you know. And it doesn't matter that there's a calm and peaceful, quiet little safe room or safe space within the burning house. The problem is that it's within a burning house, and the whole thing is going to come crashing down one day. And you know, the best place is if there's no place. If we can find a way out of this samsara. So this cessation or nibbana is more peaceful than the formless states, is a very important principle. So, but on the other hand, like as you know, Vipassana yogis, and that we need to understand as well and appreciate the benefit of samadhi. It's a very useful thing, and meditators who have have a faculty for calm and peace, they have a huge advantage. You know, they're not bogged down with wandering mind. They're not troubled and tortured. You know, sometimes we can be very, you can say, appreciative or almost, you know, appreciative joy. We can have appreciative joy in somebody who doesn't have a complicated mind and isn't in perplexity, isn't lost in doubt. You know, they can just sit very calm and peacefully and quietly and be, you know, in a state of awe or bliss or joy. I received a difficult note from one of the yogis, one of the meditators last night, just at sunset, and I didn't know what to say to this person in to reply to them an email. But so I just watched the sunset instead. It was a very nice sunset yesterday evening here in the monastery. And, you know, I you know, sometimes we have perplexity in the world. You know, we have suffering in the world. We have mental suffering. We have physical suffering. And this ability to turn the mind towards calm and peace is a very nice skill or quality, you know, where we're not we don't hold our feet too close to the fire of suffering itself. We can find a good distance from the object of meditation itself, and we're not lost into the woe of suffering. We can detach the two different arrows or darts of suffering, the physical suffering or the mental suffering. We can separate out, you know, that yes, there is suffering happening, but there are also these calm and peaceful states of mind. So, you know, this becomes like a beautiful freedom where, yes, suffering is arising, and I can have these other states of mind, you know, not to escape them, but to cultivate a space for wisdom to arise, to cultivate a space for wisdom to arise. And, you know, I do think that space for wisdom to arise, one of the factors is obviously vipassana, and then the other factor is samatha. So we have to be able to cultivate a balance for wisdom to arise, because it's wisdom itself that is going to uproot the suffering and delusion itself. So it's necessary for the Buddha to mention the form and the formless states. And the more you get into meditation and practice, the more real these things are, you know, and one becomes more and more familiar with these different states and possibilities. you know, and definitely one of the hallmarks of Asama Sambuddha is that he knows the rounds of rebirth. He knows and can see beings being born from one existence into the next. And he can see the karmic causes and conditions that propel one from one existence to the next, and see you people born into good existences because of good past deeds, or people falling out of good existences into poorer states of existence because of past deeds. And that's why he encourages us to do good, to avoid evil, and to cultivate the mind. So this is quite uplifting, and it's positive. It's not a negative or a teaching. That even calm and peace is not good enough as such. No, calm and peace is a wonderful thing, and if you know how to use it with regards to escape from suffering, it's making hay while the sun is shining. The problem as such is that it's so delightful and nice that we can get trapped by that. You know, we forget about the purpose of making hay, and we just enjoy the sunshine and we don't get the job done. So I would encourage you all to make use of the, you know, good existence I think many of you are living, that you have health, you have good mental faculties, you have peace, meaning that you're not in a, hopefully not in a land of war. And like, for instance, in my own life of coming here to Sri Lanka, I've been here through the war years in the 90s, and you know, I prefer the present time. Every time some Sri Lankan says to me, oh, you know, the government is bad and this is bad and the coronavirus is bad, and I'm like, but is it as bad as the 90s? I don't think so. You know, so we can make hay while the sun is shining. The Satipatthana is rolling out into the schools in spite of this coronavirus. It's very very uplifting, very inspiring, that in spite of the difficulty of the present time, there's a future where, you know, Vipassana will be, basic training will be available in every school in Sri Lanka, to Muslims, to Tamil speakers, to English-speaking Sri Lankans, to Sinhalese, whether they're rural, upcountry, coastal, they can all have access. In the 90s, people would say, you know, that the sasana is finished and you can't get enlightened and there is no, you can't get so on or anything like that. It was very negative here in the 90s. And only a small group of people were quite dedicated to meditation, and they were viewed as kind of oddballs and eccentric and, you know, some sort of, you know, like a strange people in a way, you know. You know, I knew the people up in Kandy, and they were quite, you know, classy kind of people in a way, you know, learned and whatnot, but, you know, not practical. You know, they were kind of oddballs, blowback to the past, fanciful idealists, or, you know, they weren't, yeah, some sort of Buddhist nationalism or whatever, but they weren't, there wasn't any relationship with the rest of you know, of Sri Lanka or Sri Lankans. So I would encourage you all to make hay while the sun is shining. And if you have the capacity to develop form and formless states, fine, develop them and be aware of their strengths and their weaknesses and learn to master these different states for your own benefit, but especially at the service of freedom from suffering, not freedom of suffering. I can dial in whatever suffering I want. That's a poor substitute for I can be free from suffering itself. I have cut the root of suffering, especially its root into delusion. And again, the problem I see around people who are very entrapped by calm states is they become very delusional. Maybe the Vipassana yogis can have a bit of a temper at times, and they can be not calm. You know, they can be, like I said, have a little bit of a temper. But they tend to have this like dosa or loba, passion, whereas the people who are into calm states are like very delusional. And it becomes very difficult to distinguish between numbing or copping out or not making progress or making progress, or it's all the same and whatever. And they'll say all these kind of very delusional statements. Having spent time with a lot of Samatha monks, I hear a lot, they have their own particular language. Like, it's always like, whatever, you know, whatever. Everything is whatever. It's like, yeah, nothing bothers me. Nothing is bothering. And well, what about suffering? Isn't suffering bothering? I feel bothered by suffering. And I think that that's healthy. I feel sad with sadness. I feel, I feel anxious, I feel shame, I feel all these other negative feelings. But with these guys, they'll be like, whatever, you know, it's all the same. It's all the same. And I'm going, nothing is the same. Nothing is the same. No two moments are the same. Everything is anicca. And they're like, no, everything is anatta. And you're like, okay, I think I think differently. I need to go to a Vipassana monastery. I value samadhi very much. And like I mentioned, I can read difficult news and watch enjoy a good sunset, not out of denial of that news, but just realize that I can have equanimity towards difficulty. So we don't cultivate numbness towards difficulty. We don't cultivate as such calmness towards difficulty. We develop equanimity and we hold it in our mind, and we have the opportunity then to bring wisdom to the matter and have insight into it and understand the nature of suffering that is propelling us from one life to the next.
So it's almost time up. I have two remarks to finish. One thing is, whenever rupa state, you come to the rupa state or the karma state, you are accepting the day-to-day unsatisfactoriness. That means arupa state also have an end. So if you regret telling that you have to be ever in the arupa and not to get see the end, that means it's a kind of a tension. I think it is put in a proper way or in a good way by Sigmund Freud. He says, if you are not accepting the day-to-day unsatisfactoriness, you will end up with trauma or hysteric level of trauma. So day-to-day unsatisfactoriness, you go to the very, very calm state, but you are ready to come back to the sound, come back to the rupa or arupa loka, the kama loka. So what is one point? So that is the part very difficult to convince in the interviews. The second thing is, whether you have craving for kama loka, whether you have craving for rupa loka, whether you have the craving for arupa loka, exactly the same. So therefore, you are replacing the craving for the kama rupa, kama loka by rupa loka. It's something improved, something kind of replacement or relative. And then rupa loka, you replace by arupa loka. So still, if you have kind of an attraction to the arupa loka, not to get disturbed and not to see the end, that will be your hook. That will be your the hitch. So that is what the Buddha highlighted. Earn the highest, but see that also ending. That is the point where your personality, that's the point where your spiritual stability or your resilience can be checked. So that makes you are a good girl guide or a boy scout, or you are a good monk, or you are a good impromptu person to adopt into the situation. So that part, that subtle part is, sorry to say, lost in Theravada. That is why maybe it is very subtle, we have to accept it. But happy enough, with the start of the Satipasala, we have more members now. They are ready to go to the very deep, and even the lost of it or the end of it, they mentioned very happily. They mentioned that it's there. So I was back in the normal day-to-day unsatisfactoriness or sensuous pleasure. But I know, after instructions, I know I can aware. Just before that, I was in a nowhere. I was in a not sleepy, not dead, but unconscious. I would like no mindfulness like. So my instruction is try to be mindful and go prepared to be in mindful. Even if you are in a arupa state, it is possible. So that is a challenge. Earlier I had my doubt to tell this to the young children, but now I found number of young children. I would like to have an international conference and let the children talk and how crispy, how sharp they can indicate it. I am not going to tell that they are Arahant, or I am not going to tell they are the Aryans, but I can say they came to this world for this message. It is not that we are giving, they have so much of potential. So potential-wise, possibility-wise, we have it. So please develop as much as, if possible, Rupa Jhana, Arupa Jhana, or its Vipassana Jhana, and try to see the end of it. When it is happening, don't react. Then you understand that non-reaction is not the samatha santa pleasure. It's a Vipassana kind of pleasure. It's the wisdom. Understand the anicca dukkha anatta. So that prepared mind is the secret. So with that, we will be summing up today's discussion. Thank you very much for the participation. Kamami kamitabbang. Kamami kamitabbang. Kamami kamitabbang. So we are getting disconnected from this end. Thank you.